UK Wine Show, show number 57. Wine Awards with Simon Waghorn. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 57 for the 29th of June, 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're going to be talking with Simon Waghorn about Wine Awards. Simon is the winemaker at Astrolabe and Whitehaven, and is one of the top winemakers in New Zealand. We're going to be talking to him not only about Wine Awards. The conversation does wander about a bit, and includes topics such as sulphur in wine and food matching with Sauvignon Blanc. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, Wine Awards for Women and a new bug in the Napa Valley. But first, there could be good news for the wine industry as the smoking ban comes into force in England on July the 1st. Research by AC Nielsen has shown that since smoking was banned in Scotland, pubs and restaurants have seen overall alcohol sales fall by around 5%, while sales of wine have risen by 3%. Beer has been the hardest hit, with sales down 7%, equivalent to 36 million pints. Nielsen say the increase in wine sales may be indicating a shift in the type of consumer frequenting pubs and restaurants. The increase could also be related to sales of pub meals, which were up 14%. Perhaps people are happier eating out and enjoying a glass of wine now that pubs are smoke-free zones. Meanwhile, a new pest native to Australia has arrived in the Napa Valley in California. The light brown apple moth could pose a serious threat to vines, and so there are plans to eradicate the moth before it spreads even further. This will involve spraying of organic pesticides on crops which fall within 200 metres of infested vines. Crops that have been affected are also being quarantined. And finally this week, the Brisbane Vine Wine Festival has created an award to highlight the importance of women as wine consumers. It's called the Wine Women Want Trophy. The new award follows an international trend. In March 2007, there was the first national women's wine competition in Santa Rosa in California. Judged entirely by women, the competition was designed to provide a snapshot of wines women enjoy. In April, the Women and Wines of the World International Competition was launched in Monaco. This too features an all-female judging panel and aims to highlight the role of women in the wine industry. And here in the UK, we have an organisation called the Women of Wine UK, which promotes the success and development of women involved in the wine and spirits trade. If you're interested, visit their website at womenofwineuk.com. That's all for the news this week, but 50 years ago, Penfolds had an advertising campaign promoting its wines as Burgundy, Sherry and Port. At that time, there was no restriction on using another place's name or another region's style of wine, provided the wine was in a similar style. For more details on this week's stories, check out the news homepage on our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers for that, Jane. I'm really looking forward to the smoking ban coming into England this weekend. While there's evidence from Scotland from increased consumption of wine, I'm more interested in sales in, say, 6 months' time. Hopefully, without smoke, we may see an increase in the average bottle price. In my local, I wouldn't dream of buying wine for two reasons. One, the list is a bit average and reflects a lack of imagination from the chain who owns it. I won't mention their names. But secondly, because if I did buy something more expensive, where subtlety and flavour is more important, you'd lose it in a smoky bar. You just can't taste anything other than the big basic aromas, which is fine for sort of cheapish wines. But if you want to spend up, you want to get the full value of what you're paying your money for. And a smoky bar certainly doesn't help that at all. Maybe with the smoking ban and perhaps some more wine drinkers in the bars, the list will improve both in quality and quantity of the wines displayed. Perhaps even some more wine by the glass would be fantastic. Next up is the interview with Simon Waghorn. But before we get into the main interview, I thought I'd like to include a previously unreleased section from UK Wine Show, show number 30. Phil Ryan, the winemaker at Hunter Valley's very successful winery Mount Pleasant, owned by Mick Williams. We did a vertical tasting on his Semillons at the time, but they also target the shows and wine awards, so it was a good opportunity to have a chat to him about how he views wine awards, and they do conflict a wee with Simon, so let's have a listen to Phil first. On your website, you say that you've won more awards than most other wine companies in Australia. Is that part of your philosophy for how you get awareness for your product, or how does that work?
Yes, the wine show system is a very important part of the Australian system over its evolution, say, the last 50 years. What the wine show system has allowed us to do is to give us all a benchmark, to give us all a comparative view of our wines. And what it's done is it's raised the bar all the time. It's actually, if you like, given the breed enhancement. And our company has got involved in this wine shows because we can see that wine shows give us not only a quality issue in terms of gold medals are fantastic to have on your wines. They give the consumer great support in terms that they can be confident that when they buy a wine from our company which has gold medals on it, then they know that this wine is of a superior standard. It also gives support to the trade, because when they're selling their wines, that gives the staff also this confidence to sell a wine, knowing that it has reached a certain standard of judging.
So you think that things like shows are really good for raising sales through, you know, outlets, whether it be in the multiples or, you know, like the supermarkets, yep, or maybe even the bottle shops?
Yes.
Do you think they're as important for maybe restaurant wines? Or
probably not in restaurants. I think if we're looking for when the consumer goes into a bottle shop and they see, say, a product like Lovedale there with four or five gold medals on it, that will certainly bring to their attention. People who, when they go into the restaurant, they may be then more wine savvy in terms of what they're looking for, brands, they're looking for styles, and they will pick off a wine list. They're looking for a brand they know or they've heard about or read about. We find that by targeting the wine press with our awards, which we've been the most successful exhibitor now for Sydney Wine Show, for instance, for 12 years in a row. So we target the wine press with that sort of information. That flows on then into magazines and in editorial, and that helps the person in the restaurant. If the consumer going to a restaurant might see a label or a wine listed there, and they say, "Oh, I read about that," that has got support from the wine press, which is very important.
Next up, we've got the interview with Simon Waghorn.
Hi, I'm here with Simon Waghorn from mixture of Astrolab and Whitehaven. You're the winemaker for both those brands.
That's right, Chris. Yeah, I'm a winemaker of about 20-odd years experience, and I've been, in the last 10 or so of those, I've been in Marlborough making largely Sauvignon Blanc, but also a number of other varietals down there.
You're an owner of Whitehaven as well as part owner of Astrolab, is that right?
Yes, at Whitehaven I'm a minority shareholder and I've been there since the very start. I'm the technical guy in charge of the winemaking and viticultural side of the business, and work with a team of winemakers and viticultural staff there. With Astrolab, I'm a half owner and more involved with the whole business, including the marketing and the administration of that.
We were talking a wee bit earlier about different wine awards. I know Astrolab has had a couple of awards in the UK. It got the IWSE Top Sauvignon Blanc Award, trophy winner, but it also got a bronze in the decanter. You know, so in one sense, it got the absolute top award for a Sauvignon Blanc, and then the next award, it only got a bronze. Do you want to comment a wee bit about that?
Yeah, sure, Chris. That often comes up. A lot of consumers are confused or bemused by the variations in awards given to some wines. It is true that occasionally a wine will go through and have a gifted run and be always striking gold, and occasionally that happens when you're very lucky. And our 04 and 05 have had that sort of luck. But if you enter enough shows as a winemaker, you know you're going to get variation. Sometimes you know you've had a lucky gold medal award. Sometimes you feel you've been robbed, and you have to get a little philosophical about it and roll with the punches. And it really is the nature of the show system that throws up these sorts of results. Often you have a panel making the decisions dominated by three senior judges. If one of those senior judges has a very strong preference or dislikes a certain style of Sauvignon Blanc and gives the wine a low mark, the high marks from the other two judges just get dropped down. So often you can go from gold to bronze. Not often, but can happen between one show and the next. More often you'll see wines sort of trading between gold and silver, or silver and bronze, or bronze and no award. And it's just human nature. You can't expect everybody to prefer the same style as the wine. Also, sometimes your wine doesn't show well on the day. Often it might be placed beside an extraordinary wine that just makes it look dull by comparison. So what we tend to do is look at the average over the year, and if we find that we're averaging in the right sort of zone, we're pretty relaxed and happy. If we find we're averaging in the wrong part of the results, then we know there's something we're doing that's not in tune with the marketplace, or something we're doing in the winery that maybe is heading down the wrong path. So that's when you sort of look at what you're doing. Otherwise, you just really you just relax and stick to the style that people have grown to know you for. And as long as people are still enjoying that style, the show system is really an indication of where you are in relation to everybody else in a snapshot of time in a particular setting. It's not really a guide to what you need to do next as a winemaker. You really have to stick to your guns and move a lot more slowly and not overreact to high or low scores, and just be true to yourself.
A show's important for you guys from a marketing point of view, and your wines aren't really in the supermarkets at all, are they? Tell me a little bit about how you try and sell both the Whitehaven and or the Astrolabe, and primarily the UK, but also I understand the US is a big market for you guys.
Well, for me, my view of marketing wines that are really destined for the restaurant trade and the fine wine retail trade is that you have to create your style. You have to make the wine the best way you possibly can to be as pleasurable to the consumer as it possibly can be. And the show system is sometimes a help to achieving that. And certainly, if you enter the shows and get a good result, it does mean that the people in the trade recognise it. They read the results of these shows more studiously than the general public often. So for a person who's not selling the wine, sort of areas where gold medal stickers help to sell things. My wines are hand sold usually by sommeliers and so forth. The only thing that a good show result really does is just adds another layer of credibility or kudos, and it means that perhaps the sommelier just gets an extra sort of level of confidence. He's picked the wine for his list because he liked it, but when it's endorsed by another sort of a system such as the show system, then it just shores up his confidence that yes, he was on the right track. But largely I sort of think that shows are great for grooming the quality of wines in various regions and for keeping people technically on song, but they're not be all and end all to marketing a wine. Making a wine for the marketplace is all about the relationships with the people that are drinking it, what your consumer wants to taste, what your sommelier likes to see in the wine, just the whole message really. It's not just the sticker that's on the bottle or something like that.
And where are you selling your wines?
Well, we are largely focused on the on-premise, so I'm making my wines to be enjoyed with food at the table or as an aperitif before dinner and lunch or dinner situations in the restaurants around the world. The Whitehaven Sauvignon Blanc is its largest outlet is the United States, where about 90,000 cases find their way into the restaurant part of the market or the fine wine, small independent retail stores. So you won't see these wines in supermarkets. Whitehaven is also available in the UK and Ireland, Hong Kong, Australia, Japan. Astrolabe has predominantly been sold back home in New Zealand in the same sector of the marketplace, primarily the restaurant trade and the independent fine wine stores. About a quarter of my production of Astrolabe would head offshore, largely to the London and Irish Dublin market, but also to Toronto and Sydney.
You're in the US market. Do you find that the US guys are adapting to the screw cap all right? I've heard rumours that the Americans aren't that keen on screw cap.
We've switched our entire production for the US over to screw cap at Whitehaven, and after a lot of misgivings initially from our large distributor in the US, there's been a total uptake of preference for it. So now we produce nothing under cork for that market. There will be the odd little pocket of resistance in the US. Places like sort of country clubs and the deep south spring to mind, but by and large, the uptake of the new, relatively new technology of the screw cap in wine has been total, and I think partly because the view is that Marlborough is an area of a new world area that's technically very, very sound. The quality has always been paramount, and people can make the mental sort of connection between a winemaking fraternity that's primarily focused on high quality and the technical aspects of the closure, which are really to help achieve that end. So I think they see it as a very positive quality change from the Marlborough producers.
And one of the things about the screw cap that I've only really just been getting my head around recently is that you don't put as much sulfur in the wine, because you get a bit of sometimes you get some of those sulfury characteristics. Is that true? And how, What's going on there?
Well, as many things as a winemaker we have to be conscious of as we take the wine to the bottle. There's the sulfite problem with the free molecular sulfur dioxide, which is put into the wine as a preservative against oxidation and any yeast spoilage. Then there's the sulfide difficulty, which is an aroma compound that's left over from the fermentation process itself that's been produced by the yeast. And if either of those two compounds, sulfite and sulfide, enter the bottle at any level above optimal, then the screw cap closure is quite unforgiving. And we have to be very conscious that we make sure the wine is totally correct when bottled, so otherwise it'll come back to haunt us.
Would you say in general that wines under screw cap generally have lower sulphur levels in them?
I think that's a fair comment. I think we know that there'll be a certain amount of binding up of some of our sulphur just post the bottling process, but once those few parts per million have been bound up by any air left in the wine, the screw cap wine becomes very stable, and so there's a very long flat plateau of the wine being able to survive with minimal sulphur. So we're finding that we err on the slightly lesser side of sulphur with screw caps, whereas with corks we sort of erred on the slightly higher. So the difference is maybe on an average about 8 parts per million, and our free sulphur might go out at 25 parts free rather than 35 parts free.
Do you think that gives people a hangover? Some people reckon sulphur gives them a hangover.
Yeah, it's a funny old thing, and it's one of those sort of, maybe it's a myth, maybe it's true for some people, but you know, when you've been drinking wine, you get a hangover. There could be several explanations for that.
No one ever says it's the alcohol content.
That's right. So you know, you wonder, you know, what's happening. Just because sulfur seems to be something that people can focus on, you know, I've not seen any published scientific material supporting some of these strongly held personal views. With red wine, for argument's sake, this free sulfur is generally pretty low for a start anyway. So maybe it's tannins that people are reacting to with allergies or so forth. With some white wine styles, particularly those that tend to go to the bottle with very low pHs, such as lighter-bodied Rieslings and Sauvignon Blancs, you tend to find that any sulfur that is present is shown in a very volatile form. It can be a problem to asthmatics, such as myself, people that have a general allergy to sulfur compounds. So, you know, there is a degree of truth in it. The hangover thing, I can't relate to sulfur personally, but I can certainly see people with allergies struggling if this free sulfur is just too high in low pH wines.
So, Simon, do you have a wine tip for us?
Well, yeah, I suppose my sort of area of expertise really is Sauvignon Blanc. That's what I make the most of, and it's also really at the moment what I'm drinking the most of. I'm a great believer in the sheer pleasure of sitting down and having the, you know, glass of Sauvignon Blanc to unwind at the end of the day, particularly in a warm summer's day in Marlborough. And I'd suggest that that's not a bad idea for anybody who's come home from a hard day at work and just wants to relax. The refreshing, quenching glass before dinner of Sauvignon Blanc. But if you're looking to find a food match for the Sauvignon, I think leafy green salads with a bit of rocket or mesclun, sometimes Greek salads with lots of olives and feta cheese make a great mix, as do, if you're looking at more a pre-dinner setting, oysters on the half shell, fresh, very fresh oysters, and Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. There seems to be a good connection between the Sauvignon flavours and the slightly briny raw oysters.
You don't find that, particularly wines like Astrolabe, where they're really so fruit intensive, you don't find that dominates the food at all?
Oh, I think there is a little bit of interplay between wine and food, but I think we've really seen a revolution in food over the last 10, maybe 15 years, where sort of the ascendant phenomenon, I think, in food has been all about fresh flavours, fresh ingredients, striking flavours. There seems to be probably less of everything mixing well with each other and being subtly sort of interactive. I think now you're seeing people, chefs, producing food with a bit of fusion, Pacific and Asian-style food. And those sorts of foods are very strong in themselves, and they tend to need something a little bit passionate and contrasting with them. It's probably the old style of more European cuisine, where everything was built around subtle and well-blended flavours, and the wines themselves were of a similar ilk. That is not quite carrying the day at the moment, and that's one of the reasons why New World wine styles have been on fire and why Sauvignon Blanc has been leading the charge.
Well, thanks very much, Simon. That's been great. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Hope you enjoyed those interviews with Simon and Phil. Well, I did think of editing out the stuff on screw caps and sulfur, I found it really interesting. I get asked all the time about headaches associated with red wines, and some people talk about sulfur, some people talk about histamine reactions. I always think it's about the volume of alcohol you consume. I also found it pretty interesting that both Phil and Simon both sell wines through the restaurant market, and Simon considers it quite helpful for sommeliers, and Phil doesn't really rate that. So, interesting and food for thought. This week's last word comes from Antonia Buckland, who had a listen to the show with Michael Cox, Wines of Chile, last week, and he said it was an excellent podcast. And whilst he's been a big supporter of Chilean wines himself, he's been fairly ignorant about it. And I must admit, I like Chilean wines as well, and I found it quite useful talking to Michael. Just, it's very hard to keep up with how things have changed, especially in the last 10 or so years with all these new regions in Chile opening up. He also said that he thanked me for the newsletter we'd just sent out. We send out a monthly newsletter. If you're not set up to receive it, you may want to receive it. Probably the best way of setting yourself up to receive it is to go to our website, www.3050.co.uk, and click on Contact Us in the top right-hand side. If you select UK Wine Show, and then you can select Yes Please for our newsletter, and also if you can put the source UK Wine Show, that would be really appreciated. Then you'll be set up to receive our monthly newsletter. An email does go to me, so if you want to give me some comments as well, there's a wee comment section as well, so that'll be appreciated. It is mainly geared up for receiving inquiries for wine tastings, but I'm sure you'll understand the forms. If you don't want to receive our newsletter, you can send me feedback at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. Next week, we're going to be talking to Siobhan Harnett, the viticulturalist from Cloudy Bay, and a really fascinating person to talk to. I quite enjoyed. We've put together two interviews talking about viticulture and wine, and just to get her point of view, wee bit technical, but we haven't had a real technical topic for a while. So, until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.